celebration of the Overroom's 20th anniversary and more. Most restaurants don't live 2 years, let alone 20.
Hey, it's listen, awesome. If our marriage can last 18 years, your restaurant can last 20.
Yeah, but that's because that's probably because you're so wonderful, because so am I. All right, your turn.
All right, also on the show later today, we have Paula Scheuer in studio with us. You know her as the kosher baker. The Jewish holidays are coming up, so she's going to give us a 411 on what we should be making for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and really any time of the year. You don't have to wait for the holidays to bake kosher goods. And Crafty Bastards is coming back to Union Market. We can't wait. This happens every year, and it's coming up the 27th and 28th. And we brought in the director of Crafty Bastards, Sarah Dick, and she came in with all these gorgeous, fabulous artisan crafts.
And her new baby.
Well, her new baby's not here yet, but brought along in a way. And Kelly Towles is in with us, too. Muralist Kelly Towles. We're going to find out all about what he's going to be doing at Crafty Bastards.
So,
what?
Chocolate. Who don't love chocolate?
I love chocolate.
But let's face it, there's okay chocolate, there's good chocolate, and then there's amazing, mind-blowing chocolate.
Or there's milk chocolate, and then there's dark chocolate.
All right. You're killing my buzz here. Can you stop? All right. So in the last category of mind-blowing, awesome chocolate, there's a place in Frederick called Zoe's Chocolate that's so good that it was chosen as the chocolatier in last year's Academy Awards Lounge. That's pretty good for folks from Frederick. And if Zoe's Chocolate is good enough for Jennifer Lawrence and Daniel Day-Lewis and that crowd, it's fine with us. And we go to this shop every time we're in Frederick. So it's a family business. And Zoe Tsoukatos, I'm doing it right? Yeah. And her brother, Pantelis. Did I do it right?
No. You did it right, yep.
Yeah, damn, I did it right. Good. They're in here. And
Andy says no. Andy says you did it wrong.
Pantelis.
Pantelis.
18 years of doing it right, I thought you were going to.
No, I was doing other things right over those 18 years. Sorry. So they're in, and we're going to be talking chocolate.
Okay. Then we're going to be talking wine.
Oh, yeah.
Because chocolate
and
wine.
Eric Platt. Eric Platt is our Steve Martin. How many times have you been in here?
Maybe six or seven.
No, it's more
eight.
Than that. I'm getting tired of seeing
12.
You. Oh, no, I really love having you. Eric is the VP and Director of Sales at Pacific Prime Wines.
And he always brings us good and interesting guests
right,
to chat
and
with.
They specialize, really, in wines from New Zealand. He's brought in wines from Lake Chalice Winery in scenic Marlborough, New Zealand. And the winemaker and owner of the vineyard, Eric Gambitis.
Chris. That's Chris.
I must have had too much to drink last night.
Right. Chris, come on up to the mic.
So, hello, everybody.
G'day, mate.
G'day, mate.
Did I do that right?
No, that's a bit more Australian, actually.
I know, well.
Just tell him not to do accents.
I'm a Jew from D.C. I can't do my own accent.
I've got to be honest, you people in the room, the only ones with an accent here today.
So, all right. So, Eric, real quick, why New Zealand wines? Why is that all that you guys really specialize in and focus on?
Well, it was really the five wineries of our group that got together and said, let's do something different for America. You know, each of the wineries had been associated with, you know, a larger importer, and they weren't getting the exposure and the attention that they really deserve. So it was really Chris and four of our other wineries. I think you've met almost all of them now,
right.
Seyfried, Carrick, Forrest, and Mai. And they really joined forces together and said, let's do something different for America. And that's how Pacific Prime Wine started. And we're having a lot of great success.
Awesome.
Focused just on New Zealand.
Well, Chris, you're clearly a hale and hearty fellow, well met. Let's talk about you. Tell us about the vineyard and the wine journal.
What does that mean?
Look, he's a lively dude, right?
Yeah, dudism.
He is a dude.
I did this for you guys today.
Thank you.
Actually, an Australian guy gave me this in Vietnam. It's quite cool.
You know, I didn't even see that. That's the dude, El Duderito.
Yeah, it is. It's got nothing to do with New Zealand, though, really.
Not really.
Yeah.
He's ours.
Yeah, he's got a bit more hair than me.
He's ours. Nice try. He's ours. So tell us about your place.
Oh, 25 years old. Just me and my business partner. We kicked it into gear back in 1989. Bit of a wing and a prayer, really.
You were windsurfing or something.
Oh, mate, I did everything in those days. I'm a bit too old to do that now. No, I'm not really. I'm only 55, so.
Hey, you're a baby.
Still a bit younger.
Trust me, you are a baby. So, you know, tell us about.
Why don't you tell us about the winery?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're 150 acres. We're based in Marlborough. We're one of probably quite a number of wineries now, back, you know, in this time of our lives. But back then when we started out in 1989, there was only about 8 producing labels then. So we were kind of like the pioneers in Marlborough. But now there's so many virtual labels out there. So we're still one of the family-owned wineries. One of the very few family-owned wineries in New Zealand. So this is kind of like this part of this PPW gig that we're doing, and which has been a huge success in the US. So, yeah, we're not newbies to the game. We certainly know what we're doing. And, you know, it's all about regional aspect, about what Marlborough is all about, and then taking that to the rest of the world. And Americans seem to, they do. You love our varieties, and it's something that we've proved to point
time. My experience is they just love everything.
Oh, yeah, no.
All right, well, we're going to talk to you guys throughout the show.
Sure.
But why don't you tell us what we're going to taste first?
Well, it's not like carrot cake. Okay, we've got a little bit here going on. But we're going to crack, the first one we're going to crack here is called a Cracklin Savvy.
Okay.
And it's ooh, Sauvignon Blanc with a crackle. In New Zealand, we call Sauvignon Blanc, well, over here you call it SP, I think, but in New Zealand we call it Savvy. So, you know, when you go into a bar or something like that, you go, hey, give us a bottle of Savvy or give us a glass of Savvy. So this is kind of, this is really different for New Zealand. It's kind of different for the world because they probably maybe, we were kind of like the first to come up with this idea. The first idea was
you bottle it and shut the bottle like a soda pop.
Yeah, yeah. What we do is just make the main blend and then we get a line of CO2 and basically stick it in the tank and let the valve open and and away she goes. And we got it.
Thank you.
You know,
can you do that noise again?
Yeah. They actually do a good helicopter too, actually.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we can do that later in the show.
Right, yeah.
Okay, well, we're gonna
do a totally different show just focused on that.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, well, let's get cheers to everybody.
Salud.
And let's get to our first guest, Tony and Ashok.
Ashok. I've known you a million years. I realize I met you like 1992.
No, 1989.
Was it 89?
89.
Back then, I had
God,
hair.
You were 10 years old.
I wasn't even in DC. Yeah,
that's right. And you were, was it the Bombay
Club?
Club? I guess that's where I met
Bombay
you.
Club.
You've
yeah,
done but quite well for yourself. You're an amazing dude. Why don't we talk a little bit about, you know, Knightsbridge and how all that happened? Because, and this is not to jinx you, but as far as I know, you've hit the ball over the fence every time. You've never had a restaurant that hasn't done amazingly well.
It also sounds like he's sucking up, but go ahead. No,
and that free meal tonight? No, seriously. I mean, I've known you since you were not, I don't even know if you were an owner of Bombay Club at
yes,
that
I
point.
Was.
You were partial. All right.
I
but
was
I
own.
Mean, Ardeo. I mean, you found the right real estate, you found the right, you know, concepts.
The right chef sitting next
right
to me.
The right chef. Well, Tony was just nudging you in the thing.
Yeah, I know he did.
So talk about Knightsbridge a little, and what I'd also like to know what future plans you've got.
All right. So came here, opened my first restaurant in 1989, Bombay Club. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then opened 701 restaurant, which is about, I think, a year and a half, 2 years later. And then the new building came across the street from the Bombay Club. And I said, God, this is a beautiful building. What shall I do? And then President Clinton visited Bombay Club in August. And I said, God, you know, I'm going to name the restaurant Oval Office. I'm going to take this space. But they wouldn't let me name the restaurant Oval Office. So
who wouldn't?
Government wouldn't.
Oh, the government wouldn't.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and I said, cool. Then I end up naming the Oval Room. So now it's 20 years on October 4th, just around the corner from your 18th anniversary.
Too, right.
Right. So we will always celebrate, you know, 2 years ahead of you.
Right.
Okay. So 20th anniversary. And then 9 years ago, I had Tony come and join me from John George, who is the executive sous chef there. And he came here and restaurant has taken, you know, as you well know, restaurant is very well recognized now in the city as one of the top modern American cuisine restaurant. And then after Oval Room, I opened Ardeo in Cleveland Park. And then the first wine bar. I think I was the first one to open the wine bar.
I think
bar.
We were there at when Ardeo. Okay. I was there when it first opened.
Yeah, no, but
Vernon Jordan was there. It was,
that's correct, yeah.
Me and Vernon Jordan, everybody. That's
and
right.
President Clinton came here, the first sitting president ever to visit Cleveland Park.
Wow.
Yeah. Except Grover Cleveland, but that's okay.
Well, he lived there.
Yeah, right.
So.
Well, and you also have the two Rassicas.
I do have two Rassicas.
And Nopa.
I think everyone should have two Rassicas, don't you?
Yes.
If you're going to have one, have two.
But
let's focus on the Oval Room just for a second. Because given that you opened up the Bombay Club and 701, I mean, each of your restaurants are very different in their flavor, their texture, sort of. Each has their own sort of feeling, and you allow each to be chef focused as well.
Right.
Don't mind me while I'm talking. It's very difficult to do two things at once. So let's talk, Tony. Let's talk about the feel of the Oval Room and how it's evolved over the years.
You know, the restaurants evolve, you know, every year based on, you know, what is inspiration or focus or what's important to us, mm-hmm. you know, from year to year. So, you know, we pretty much create new dishes every single year based on, you know, what's exciting to us or an idea or a thought. And even when we did the current menu that we have now, we actually created the menu up at Ardeo. And so kind of being up there kind of gave us a little bit of a different focus this time than creating dishes in the Oval Room.
Are you what is your title? Are you just at Oval Room? Are you still? No, because you're doing like all the restaurants, right?
Tony's focused on the Oval Room, mm-hmm. but he's a group executive chef. So he helps me with, you know, Bibiana, 701, mm-hmm. Ardeo, or wherever else I need help. So mm-hmm. when we hired a new chef, so he helps me, you know, selecting the chef through tasting, then coaching the new chef coming in mm-hmm. Until the chef settles down.
Okay. And
then he goes back to Oval Room saying, God, I don't like this food. I got to change it.
But you're in the kitchen at Oval Room?
Yes.
Every day.
Okay. And so let's just talk about, so you did this tremendous renovation.
Yes.
What was it that you, what was your vision with the renovation?
From my point, you know, like a restaurant 20 years old, we need to freshen up the room. Mm-hmm. The decision had to be made, shall I renew or shall I not renew it? Because city is moving into different quarters. Mm-hmm. But it's such a
problem. But it's also spreading out.
It is spreading out, but it is, you know, like a few years ago, the focus was on Penn Quarter, then moved to 14th Street. So,
but now there's Bloomingdale, and there's 8th correct. Street, and there's the Navy Yard. Right. I mean, all these areas are really sort of coming
correct.
Into their own.
Correct. And Oval Room always have, you know, it's a very high power clientele during the day. And in the evening, it's always been a destination restaurant. Mm-hmm. So when I decided that we're going to renew the lease, then I said, okay, we need to freshen up the restaurant. Mm-hmm. So I tell you, this renovation makes me happy going to the restaurant. Mm-hmm. It's really vibrant, really happy. And I'm sure Tony agrees with me. He's been there 9 years. We go to the dining room and look at this. I said, wow, it feels good. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then, you know, we closed the restaurant for 5 weeks, and Tony has sous chefs and pastry chefs, worked at Ardeo during the day because it's closed during the day, mm-hmm. And creating a new menu, and this menu is very exciting. It has a little more Asian influence on the food. And,
okay, we're going to have to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about some of the things that we can see on
the
menu.
Taste some
and my
of
husband
things.
Wants to eat it.
Yeah.
This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
We all face challenges, but when you're a child in need, facing those challenges can feel like moving a mountain.
That's why WTOP has helped create a place for the kids.
Join us as we support the Butler Wyatt Clubhouse number 2.
Since 1937, the Butler Wyatt Clubhouse has provided a safe place where kids in our area can learn, explore, and grow.
Visit aplaceforthekids.com or the charity section at WTOP.com to learn about ways that you can help.
Together, we can move mountains.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. At 7, I shower. Every day I wake up
for
at
those
5.
Caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community to help us better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide. But only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're talking to Ashok Bajaj and Chef Tony Conti, and we're really focusing on the 20th anniversary of the Oval Room. What do you got going on
there?
Well,
Tony, I want to hear about the food you're making. Tell us about what could be seen on the new menu and what you brought in today.
We brought in 3 dishes today. When we designed the menu this go-around, we added a category of crudos or raw. And I have two here for you today. One is the Atlantic Fluke with a sauce of coconut, mm-hmm. some cilantro, radish, and pickled red onion and a little chili flake. And then you have in front of you the tuna ribbons that has...
You're the only one I've ever seen cut the tuna
in the ribbons
like this before, and it's so beautiful.
Thank you.
The one time you did it for me, you did it like a rope.
Yeah, we did a rope.
On the plate.
Yep. Yeah.
It was so pretty. It was beautiful.
I must not have been there.
You weren't. Hmm. But it was still beautiful. And tell us about this on top.
So you have fried tapioca or puffed tapioca with a little bit of togarashi.
It's delicious and beautiful. Really beautiful. Well, was there something special that you wanted to bring to the menu? I mean, your food has always been very unique, and you've always been very cutting edge without being trendy at all. So was there, what are you looking at? Like, what? How do you get inspired with what you put on the menu?
You know, it just depends on, you know, the mindset, or again, like I said before, what was important. When we put this menu together and looked at it in black and white, came across two things that were pretty interesting, was a lot of the dishes had a Asian influence to it, which was not what we were trying to do. It just happened to be where we were, and a couple of, you know, kind of thought processes based on steakhouse mm-hmm. ideas. And one of them was a, you know, when you go to a steakhouse, you'll see a tomato salad with like a creamy dressing and a little bit of lettuce. So we created that using a nori dressing, some jalapeno, and ribbons of romaine and bib lettuce, and a little bit of grilled bread on that. Mm-hmm. So those were the two things that when we stepped back and looked at the menu, those were the things that that mm-hmm. popped out really quick to us.
Great. All right.
Well, guys, radio moves fast.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having us here.
Yeah, thank
honor
you
having
coming
a living
in.
Legend in
well,
our
thank
studio,
you.
Pal. And Tony, thank
Stop
you. Congratulations.
Saying that.
Thank you.
He's not that old.
I know we're both
40 is not old. Nick, you're telling
me. I'm just living. Congratulations on the 20th anniversary.
Thank you.
All right.
Paula, come on, sit down.
Well, yeah, Paula, you sit down. Chris Gambitsa, step back up to the mic. Tell us what it is about your location and the land there that makes you, I mean, you guys, you've been in the business for a while, but you're making wines that are so special that Air New Zealand wants them on their flight. So what do you have going there that makes it that special?
Marlborough's unique in a way that it's got its own little unique microclimate. It's surrounded by two huge mountain ranges. So it's in this cute little basin, which is probably about 40 miles wide by 40 miles deep. Tewa, I mean, there's a river that runs over the western side called the Wairau River. It's a bit of Māori for you.
Mm-hmm. The Wairau River
runs over the western side of the valley. And so we get a lot of stony, the soil's really stony through there. And as the valley undulates up towards the east, so the soil changes into silty, loamy, and then quite a heavy clay. But in that whole valley there, you know, it's just one big sun trap. But with Marlborough, it's hot days and cool nights.
Mm-hmm.
So with those aromatics like Sauvignon Blanc, which Marlborough's well renowned for, it's very unique. I mean, there's no other country in the world that they try to emulate those flavor profiles the results we get from Marlborough, but it's extremely unique and nobody can basically create that.
You can't fake it.
Oh no, mate, it's the real deal, and it is. And you know, a lot of people talk grassy, herbaceous. I mean, genuine Marlborough Sauvignon is currant-y. We call it sweaty. It's melony.
Really minerally. I mean, the finish is always heavy on the mineral, don't you think?
Some can be. I mean, a lot of wineries through that region, because they want to hit a market at a price point, they might overcrop and they get that sort of lean, sort of stalky mineral character. But the real deal is the ones that have that full richness of flavour,
mm-hmm.
that are more foodie. They've got a foodie aspect, more currant-y, more sweety, more melony, more tropical, but mm-hmm. fruit weight as well.
I knew
well.
A girl named Melanie once.
Hey?
Nothing.
Melanie.
Don't even listen.
Never mind.
That'll get you into trouble, mate. Right. I'll tell you, that'll get you into trouble.
I don't care.
What are you pouring? Yes, she does. No. What are you pouring? She gets jealous all the time. You are pouring what next?
Well, while we were just sitting there eating carrot cake last night, we thought, what are we going to pour today? And we've got a 2013 Lake Chalice Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc. It's kind of current vintage at the moment. So, you know, it's got a year's bottle age, so it's starting to fatten out. The acid, the acidity is starting to soften, but there's still acid there. I mean, you've got to have acid in there.
Okay.
And a lovely balance of residual sugar, all in screw cap too, which is, you know, that's
Have you
that's
always
the business.
Been screw When did you start with screw
no,
cap?
No, we flicked into screw cap back in 2001. And we were kind of freaked
out.
That was
the thing John Forrest was talking about too.
Yeah, old Johnny. Yeah, we were kind of us and another fellow winery were the basically we were the pioneers. I must congratulate the restaurant boys as well that are in here today, because they're 20 years old and we're 25 years old, so we're all celebrating a bit of a milestone. Right. It's good stuff, mate. Eh? I mean, you know, it goes great with spicy. Sorry,
I love when you call me mate.
Mm. Yeah, it goes great with spicy food, salad, something with a bit of acidity. You know, even with mild chili, sort of mild chili spiced foods as well, it goes great. So it's I don't necessarily pigeonhole your wines and whatnot.
Awesome. Well, while we're sitting here giving this a shot, we're going to turn to Paula Scheuer, who is known far and wide as the kosher baker, and she's got a new book out, a new cookbook called The Kosher Holiday Baker. And how timely, since Rosh Hashanah is upon us and my wife's up early doing
chicken soup. I had the brisket. The brisket's in the oven. The soup is on the stove. I'm getting
a head start. Ahead of me already.
I am it's all going. It's already happening while I'm here in studio. I started it all this morning.
So for people who are listening who have no idea what we're talking about, what is kosher baking?
Well, people who are kosher follow certain dietary laws that tell us what we can and cannot eat. Mm-hmm. And for baking, we don't mix milk and meat at the same meal.
Right.
So if we're going to have brisket for dinner and we want to have great dessert afterwards, it has to be a dairy-free dessert. So I studied pastry in Paris, and all the desserts there were made with butter and cream and were fabulous.
Damn the French. Damn them.
We love French desserts. But then I took the French desserts and used all kinds of dairy-free and soy ingredients and mm-hmm. converted them all into dairy-free so kosher people can eat them with their meat
meals. Kosher baking was tough.
It was eating cardboard.
It was hard to get similar effects.
It was terrible. People were eating, the bakeries were serving the same cookies and cakes that people have been eating for 50 years.
Right, terrible texture.
Some of them were made 50 years ago and just kept around.
Well, the big problem is since the late 1950s, all the bakeries started buying the dough and buying the fillings and slapping them together. Mm-hmm. So if you're in Miami, Chicago, New York, all the desserts taste exactly the same because they have the same vendors in New Jersey. So I'm trying to get people to get in the kitchen and bake from scratch because it's healthier, it's better for you, and it tastes so much better.
Well, so how, for those who do bake kosher or those who keep kosher, but I don't keep kosher, but I am using your cookbook.
But anybody can use these desserts.
Right. So tell us what we need in our pantry. What do we need in order to create these kinds of desserts?
Okay, and you should know that people who are lactose intolerant love my recipes whether they're Jewish or not. And this book has 37 gluten-free recipes, too. So people on special diets and people who are kosher, we have this great synergy. We're looking for the same thing. Mm-hmm. So what do you need in your pantry? You need some kind of milk substitute. So that could be soy milk, almond milk, rice milk. Mm-hmm. There are non-dairy whipping creams, but I'm kind of afraid of the ingredients in those, and I use them when I have to whip something. But I've been moving towards coconut milk and coconut oils as well, too. So instead of butter, I might use dairy-free margarine, or I've discovered recently coconut spread, which makes great cookies and great tart crusts.
And it has a nice texture.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. Mm-hmm. And there's soy sour cream and soy cream cheese. I use the soy cream cheese to make carrot cake with lots of icings and stuff that you can have with the wonderful wine.
Carrot cake is the word of the day.
Well, you guys are like carrot cake junkies over there.
I
just raised my eyebrows.
I would have brought one.
It's soy sour cream. How? Because sour cream happens to be the thing I would take to a desert island. So how can
not
possibly
me,
be
the
good?
Sour cream.
I use it in doughs and I'll use it in a cake as a yogurt or a a real sour cream substitute. It works really well.
Really? We got to try that, I guess.
Yeah, there's soy cheese out there. There's all kinds of products. So it's really fun for me to be a kosher baker at this time in history because I have all these great tools to work with and new things keep coming out. So it's fun.
Well, so let's talk about your new book because it's all about holiday baking and you broke it up into the holidays, which was really nice.
Right, and it's color-coded for each holiday. So Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur together, but don't think I'm advocating actually eating the desserts on Yom Kippur. They're to eat when the fast is over.
The break fast, right.
So I once did
a
radio show.
You're a rebel, aren't you?
I once did a radio show that was called Yom Kippur Baking, and I thought that was ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. Clearly they were not Jewish, but that's okay.
So for this holiday...
Not everyone can be, honey.
So for every holiday in the chapter in the book, I break it up from snack food and entertaining food. Because if you're having people for your Rosh Hashanah dinner, you might serve something more fancy than you want your family to nosh on for breakfast or for tea time.
Well,
something
and also
like that.
A lot of people do open houses.
Absolutely.
During Rosh Hashanah. So having little things, snacks instead
right,
of
so
big
here
cakes.
I have honey cake biscotti and babka bites, and for these and for every recipe in the book, basically bread and chocolate and chocolate chips inside, and they're really yummy, and
they're
David
gorgeous.
Does not want to share them with Nikki, but they're really, really cute. Babka is my most famous dessert, and every recipe in the book has storage instructions, so you know what you can make and freeze before the holiday.
But here's the thing, I bake a lot. I'm afraid to bake babka. It just sounds scary.
Oh, babka's not scary. Have you ever made challah?
No.
Okay.
I don't make
challah
either.
We need to make challah together. I teach cooking classes here. You got to come to the challah bake and take class.
She makes me challah.
I have 12 round challahs in the freezer right now.
Melchol's got to come with me. Okay.
So
it just seems like
it's a yeast dough. The babka dough is easier than challah. You just mix the ingredients together and they rise, and then you roll them out with chocolate, and you can make any filling you like: jam, nuts, cookie, you know, chips. Any kind of nuts, anything you like.
Well, let's talk about, so you just discussed, you know, that there are gluten-free recipes in here and lactose intolerant. So, like, for the, let's talk about gluten-free. That is such a term now. I mean, I know so many people who are not eating gluten for health reasons or a variety of different reasons. What are some of the recipes you have that work for gluten-free eaters?
So one of my favorite recipes in the book, which I make all year round, is in my Passover chapter, and they're these Florentine bars, which are on the cover. So one side of them is cranberries, orange zest, and nuts, and egg whites and sugar, and the other side is chocolate. And they're so easy to make, and they freeze so beautifully. I make them all year round. They just happen to be gluten-free.
Okay. These babka bites are delicious. They are so yummy. What kind of chocolate do you use?
So for the filling, I use Hershey's unsweetened. Tried the fancy ones. Go back to Hershey's. And for chocolate chips,
okay,
I use dairy-free ones.
It's always chocolate in here. She's
I'll put that chocolate in my babka bites this week for sure.
All right, I'm going to jump in because we got about a minute. I want to make sure people know where to find the
book.
So you can find the book in Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon. It's in Williams-Sonoma. It's sometimes in Costco, Judaica stores. But really, every bookstore is carrying it.
Look, and what about your classes?
So I teach classes here in Chevy Chase, but I also travel around the country and beyond. I went to China last year to teach classes for Jewish communities all over the country and the world.
How can people find out about your classes?
So my website is thekosherbaker.com, and you can find me there and contact me through there. And I have some classes coming up in the next few months in tarts and pies. And you can learn how to make babka in the next 2 months. So come on over to my house.
She's perfect for radio. You're a fast talker.
I know.
I'm from New York. So, you know.
Well, thanks so much, Paula. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
And the babka's delicious.
The babka is delicious.
Green light. Hey, girl. School zone. I'm getting hungry. Car changing lanes. You want to meet me for pizza? Stop sign. Intersection clear. Yeah, street. Pizza sounds good. Ball in street? Girl in street!
It's hard to concentrate on two things at once, like texting and driving. Stop the text. Stop the wrecks. How will you stop texting and driving? Tell us at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
The federal government produces massive amounts of information every day, but most of it's useless beyond the agency that produces it because it's not available in a usable format. That's starting to change. With the passage of the Data Act, the first steps have been taken. But what's next? Join the Data Transparency Coalition and Workiva September 30th for Data Transparency 2014, the preeminent gathering of leaders from Congress, the executive branch, and industry to find out what's next for data transparency and open data. Register today at datatransparency2014.org.
The traditional light bulb, a groundbreaking invention in 1879. It's time we switch to longer-lasting Energy Star light bulbs. They're more efficient than the old bulbs, like a text message is more efficient than a carrier pigeon. And they cut down on our energy costs. Because in our own groundbreaking age, we deserve a light bulb that saves us some cash. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. And you know that phrase, you're a crafty bastard. Well, Crafty Bastards are back. It's the 11th annual, I think, Crafty Bastards Arts and Crafts Festival. Sarah Dick is here. She's the executive director. Do I have that right? What are you?
Festival director.
Whatever that is.
It's mine. It's all mine.
And Kelly Towles is a muralist.
Yes.
Artist?
You make murals?
I make a lot of mess.
Right, he makes a mess.
Perfect.
He's really a methylist. Yeah. And it's coming up. So, Sarah, why don't you give us the basics, where, when, what, and all that.
Sure. It's going to be next weekend, Saturday and Sunday, at Union Market. You can go to washingtoncitypaper.com/craftybastards.
Does the city paper put it on? Yeah. Did you get into, how did it all happen? Let's start from the beginning.
Okay, started in 2004, and City Paper was looking for some sort of community festival that they wanted to put on. Mm-hmm. And the first idea was a flea market, but then we were thinking something more to do with
art. And you've been a part of it since the beginning.
I have.
Okay. But wait, Nick Wiseman was here. Was he part of it too?
He helped us out a few years ago when it was our last year in Adams Morgan.
Right.
We added a food component,
when
and he
rained,
helped us a bit.
Like a son of a gun.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We've really lucked out on weather, but that year was the worst. It was cold and rainy.
It's probably because we were involved.
But it looks like next weekend's going to be beautiful.
Okay, so yeah, so City Paper was... They're part of the concept.
All right.
Yeah, that's right.
Number of artisans, where do they all come from?
Sure. This year, it's more artisans than I think we've ever had before. We have over 170 booths. Artists come from all over. We kind of have a reputation in the country as being one of the top arts and crafts festivals, both for shopping and from an artist perspective. So mm-hmm. Portland, Oregon, we've got people from Arcata, California.
But how does it work? So people submit their products.
Sure.
And then what?
Yeah, it's a juried process, and actually Kelly was on the jury with us again mm-hmm. this year. So people submit images and a vendor statement. We review every application we get, and one out of four people get in. So it's the top
25%. But what's the range of artisans and stuff?
It ranges all over the place, from housewares to clothing, jewelry, toys and plush.
Cat sweaters.
Say that with a little enthusiasm there, Kelly.
Wait, I just coughed up a fur ball when you said that, Kelly.
Cat sweaters.
Cat sweaters.
That vendor also makes cat socks, so if you're into
cats.
Wait,
there's sweaters for cats?
That vendor.
No.
I wish.
That vendor needs
that
a shrink.
They would have gotten in immediately.
The vendor was actually a contestant on Project Runway.
Okay.
And so he has a cat-themed line from sweaters to socks. Not for cats.
Well, Modern
for
Family,
humans.
Weren't they making cat capes or something?
No,
too?
No, no. He made a mermaid costume for the cat.
Whatever.
Kelly, what kind of things do you have there?
I'm going to kind of go all over the place. I'm going to do an installation. I'm going to bring out a giant ball and paint it, which is pretty impressive.
Okay, we're on radio, so we need a little more description about what you're going to be doing.
So, Kelly, you have a big ball.
Yes, I do.
It's hot.
It is hot. Mm. It's basically a giant, it's going to be, I think, 6 or 7 foot in diameter, really massive. I'm just going to paint it and have a lot of fun with it and let the kids just attack it and kick it all day long. And then I'm going to actually incorporate these thing called dunnage bags. Dunnage bags are basically used for tractor-trailer trucks to inflate in between products so that it doesn't fall over. Basically giant pillows. But basically I'm going to take those and turn them into actual... pieces so that we can put them through Crafty and have fun with those.
But I mean, you've got ceramics artists and I'm looking at
you
this.
You brought in all this great stuff yeah. today. Why don't you talk mm-hmm. about some of the products that you brought in today?
Sure. I mean, obviously we have some craft supplies, so hand-spun yarn. We have several vendors that'll have hand-spun yarn. Many of them actually raise their own goats and sheep and then they share it.
Make it happen?
Yeah, they do it all. They spin
it all.
You
know why? Because they're crafty.
That's right.
Those bastards.
Well, and actually, when people apply, they get extra points for how much they put into their product. So the more handmade it is, the better their chances of getting in.
Can we talk about these?
Yeah.
These are badges.
Yeah, we have a new vendor. Her name, business name is called Snarky Scouts, mm-hmm. and they're pretty fantastic. They're basically merit badges, but they're not
like a la Girl Scouts.
But with a little more
snark
to them. Yes.
So the one I'm holding says it's a merit badge at number 950 for twerking, and it has a picture of a girl twerking. The other one is
give that one to Nikki
for selfies. I love that. I think that's really unique and very cute.
Yeah, they're very modern and very snarky. I have a feeling her booth will be mobbed.
But I think
time.
The thing to get across is it's not your mother's craft festival with some painters and some ceramics,
yeah,
some
you
potters
won't find
and all that.
Wooden ducks and bonnets or anything like that.
Can we talk about some of the clothes you brought in?
Oh, we sure can. Yeah. I actually usually stock up at Crafty Bastards in terms of clothing. So there's a local designer. Her name is Erica Schreiber, and she makes completely constructed clothing, very appropriate for the office.
I'm obsessed.
She sent us a very nice skirt and a little crop top. She's going to have a booth full of fantastic items.
Fabulous.
It will look wonderful on you.
Really beautiful. I'm going
to
try it on
after the show. You say the word clothing to Nikki, and the saliva starts to gather in the corner of her mouth.
doesn't gather.
There's a lot of great clothing.
I can just wear them.
You'll find everything from skirts and dresses to t-shirts, pullovers, hats, and lots of accessories as
scarves.
Well. Scarves.
What about jewelry?
Jewelry. We have a lot of jewelry. I can't remember exactly how many booths, but it's like 18% of the vendors have jewelry. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot. And what we look for is you're not going to find stuff that you would find in a store. So we're looking for something unique. And all of the vendors tend to have a different take on the type of jewelry.
All right. Wait, hold on. Well, I've got a question to ask.
Is it a decent question?
It's a really good question.
Okay.
Ready? Are you ready for my good question?
I'm ready.
So it's next Saturday and Sunday at Union Market. Is there going to be other food there as well? You've got other purveyors of food, or is it just the Union Market people?
Yeah, what we've done, we have the Union Market people, and actually a lot of those folks are going to be set up outside on the festival with some booths as well. Mm-hmm. Then we have, I think it's like 20 different food trucks, the best in D.C. And we've also added other artisanal food vendors. So we have somebody who makes maple syrup, Paisley Fig, who does the pastries over at Room 11, will be there.
Oh, cool.
We have a root beer vendor, ice brewed coffee. So we've got, there's lots to eat and drink. Oh, and of course, the New Belgium Brewing beer garden. So you can have some beers while you're there, too.
So how is that set up? Is that like separate?
No, it's all in the parking lot. The vendors, the craft vendors are largely under tents, and then we have a separate section for the beer garden and the food trucks. Mm-hmm. But it's open and you can walk around.
And you have to buy tickets to come?
You do.
How
you
much
can
is
buy
it?
Tickets in advance are $5 for one day, $8 for the weekend.
At
WashingtonCityPaper.com/CraftyBastards.
I'm just saying, that was a lead in.
Or you can
that.
Always Google Crafty Bastards and you will land at the right place. You can also go online and see all the vendors that are going to be there. It's kind of overwhelming. Mm-hmm. So I encourage people to plan their shopping before they come. But you don't have to.
Because there's a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah, it's intense.
Do you ever have little old biddies come at you and yell at you for using the word bastards?
We've had some controversy over, but largely no. Especially, I mean, the first year, our publisher had her sons decked out in their Crafty Bastards t-shirts, and they were like 2 years old. They were really cute.
Oh, I love it.
If that doesn't work, you can use poo-poo heads. All right, thanks.
Thank you both for coming today. Thank you so
Zoe,
much.
Zoe, step up to the plate. Pantelis. I did it, man. Step up to the plate.
I'm not even going to try to say it.
Zoe's Chocolates in Frederick, Maryland is a home run success story. And Zoe and her brother Pantelis are here to talk about it. Take it from the top. How did you guys end up in the chocolate biz?
Our dad actually used to make chocolate for about 30 years. And it
here,
was
somewhere
for,
else?
For sale or just for the family?
For sale.
Okay.
He used to work with another company and we kind of grew up in the business. It was something that our grandparents used to do when they came from Greece. So I guess in 2007, we decided that, you know, and it, there was an opportunity. Our dad wasn't continuing doing what he was doing. And we just decided, you know, it was something that we really loved. We grew up with. Mm-hmm. It wasn't
something. How come you guys aren't fat?
Chocolate's not fattening.
What a tease. I set that up for you.
It's the machine that we have that takes all the calories out.
Have a portion and not eat the entire loaf of babka.
Then so you mean don't eat a babka bite and a cookie? Don't eat both?
Well, the idea behind the babka bite was to only have like something small, but I can't help eating like five.
All right, so the real question is, what makes your chocolates? Because, you know, when you're a place in Frederick, Maryland, gets picked to put its chocolates someplace at the Academy Awards, that's a big deal, and that's long distance big deal. So what is it about your chocolates that sets them apart?
I mean, I think what would our entire, what we really wanted to do when we first started was kind of think outside of the box and create something totally different than what the traditional chocolates are. Once you get, you know, you try one chocolate, it's all kind of the same consistency, it's the same flavors. And that's when we looked at our heritage. We're originally from Greece. Mm-hmm. So we created a Mediterranean collection with baklava and tahini, Aegean pistachio.
I saw that, the tahini. I mean,
we've had it. It's
cool.
Very good.
Yeah.
So some really unique flavors. And then we also did a caramel collection and we did an apple pie, spiced pear. So
you're making a lot of noise.
Oh, shush. It's my radio show. You're open that way.
But what were you looking for as far as the texture of the chocolate? I mean, as a chocolate maker, what are you trying to create?
Something that's not typical. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have a ganache, it's sometimes you have one ganache, you've had like 10 ganaches. Mm-hmm. It's all pretty much the same consistency. It's very smooth. We like, you know, putting nuts inside. And
that's the filling of the chocolate.
Right.
Right. Well, no, but I'm asking about the chocolate. Like, what is it about the making of your chocolate that you are bringing to the table that's so different from, let's say, you know, a more generic brand?
Right. Well, the one great thing about being in Pennsylvania is where our production facility is. There are a lot of farms and we get all our ingredients locally sourced. So everything that if we wouldn't eat it ourselves, we would never sell it.
Okay.
So we try and do everything very natural, organic use, you know, things like that is really what we focus on.
Well, I'm going to put you on the spot a little. I found a quote in some of your materials that said, your competitors made flavors to shock and awe to be different. We instead said our chocolates simply have to be delicious. So what's that really mean? I mean, what are the other people? Is it like craft beers and the mass-produced beers? Are they just trying to get an okay product out there and you guys are focused on? Do you focus groups and do you test out your chocolates? How do you do it to make them?
Sometimes we're the focus groups, I think.
Yeah.
No, but we do.
I think, you know, once you start seeing a trend of something, you know, everybody ends up following it, and people, it's like in any food where you, mm-hmm. you end up seeing people try something, you know, like the spicy chocolate. Everybody was doing spicy chocolate.
Cause it's really good.
Mm-hmm. I mean, some people really like it and some people don't. So it's
like, doesn't like it. And I love it.
But you know, for us, for me at least, and I think I can speak for Pontelise as well, is that when you thinking of food, it's a comfort. It's something mm-hmm. that's homey to you. And you know, you don't want something that is totally unusual and out of the ordinary, but you can do something very simple, but make it really great.
So how do you do it? What are some of, like, what's your version of a spicy chocolate? I will open it in the commercial break in 1 minute.
Well, we do.
I have 5 actual children.
You're
and
not
then
my
he
mommy.
Is like my sixth
You're
one.
You're my wife. Open the damn thing.
I will open it in a minute. Ugh. Go ahead.
I forgot what your question was.
Oh, I was asking. Sorry. As I fight with my husband.
It's like 5
What's
kids.
Your version of spicy? Like, how do you make it yours? What do you try? How do you do it to make
it
yours?
So we pretty much look around to find really unique ingredients. Mm-hmm. So like smoked sugar or different salts. We play a lot with salts.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Mm-hmm. We roast nuts and caramelize them. Like the bar right there is pumpkin and sunflower.
You mean
sunflower.
The bar that my husband
that
really wants me to open?
I'm
going to
explain
because
it.
Because she's a crappy bastard.
All right. Why don't we take a quick break? We'll take a quick break. I'll open up the chocolate bar and we'll come back and talk more chocolate. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
You're so annoying.
You're so annoying.
Stop copying me. Mom, tell her to stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop talking me.
Kids will spend 10 minutes copying everything their sibling says.
You're such a doofus.
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes, twice a day. They have the time.
Mom!
A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
Did you know that birthday parties help build confidence in kids?
Yeah. Did you know that giving kids less sugar before bedtime helps them sleep better?
Oh, totally. Did you know that friendly kids have more friends?
Everybody knows that.
Hey, guys, did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
I didn't know that.
Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
This is Captain Richard Phillips. In 2009, my United States-flagged merchant marine vessel was boarded by Somali pirates. The U.S. Navy intervened and saved my life. Our nation's sea services keep the world's waterways open and help our nation's economy stay strong. Help support our Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, and Merchant Marine so they can stay on the job by joining me as a member of the Navy League of the United States. Learn more at thenavyleague.org and donate through the combined federal campaign number 58495.
All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're talking to Zoe and Pontelise of Zoe's Chocolates. And I guess one of the questions is, it's a family business. I asked you this during the break. Do you ever argue about what you're going to do?
Yeah, it's a flavor ever come up that one of you is like, I love
chef,
this.
Because your brother's your chef, right? What's your brother's name?
Petros.
Okay, does Petros ever say, this is what I'm doing, and tough noogies, or?
Kind of, but we kind of put them and keep them and skip them straight. Kind of
locked in a room somewhere?
Exactly. That's why he's not here today. Down, yeah.
That's right, he's in the dog pen.
Well, yeah, we all throw out an idea or two and then kind of mold it into one piece or one
so
flavor.
So where can it go? In other words, you've got kind of every year you've sort of got a responsibility to come out with something new and special and different. So when we walk into your store, which we do about 3 times a year, we're in Frederick, there's something new to go, dude, look at that. So how do you do that?
I mean, we try as much as we can. We're always trying to create something new.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we focus a lot on the holidays and what would we want for the specific holiday. And then we try and build on that.
What about your children's line? These are so cute. Why do this specific? Like, chocolate isn't enough for kids who need to make a line specifically for them?
Well, I think there isn't something that's really for kids, like geared towards kids in an artisan chocolate.
Right.
So what we wanted to do is create something just for children. It's made with organic and gluten-free ingredients, since there are a lot of kids that come into this shop and they can't have, especially, you know, in the last couple of years, we've noticed an influx of this.
What is this with peanut? I mean, when I was little, nobody had a peanut allergy. Not everybody's got a peanut. I mean, what happened? Do we know?
They're not doctors. They're chocolate makers.
Actually.
You look like a Dr. Chocolate to me.
Do you have an answer?
I don't, actually. Okay. I can make one up. No, I'm not sure why.
No, seriously, BS one. It's okay.
Okay. Well, the reason is the genetic.
So what can we look forward to in the coming year? Is there anything that you guys are, like, working on that we should know about?
We are. We're working on a couple new pieces. One is with a chestnut honey. We brought some ingredients back from Greece.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them that we really liked was a honey that was chestnut honey. It was very good, very unique flavors. So we're playing a lot with honey this year, and we have a new bar coming out.
I think so. It was did we decide yet?
No.
That's why our brother's at the, he's back working on it. No, I'm not sure.
And for people who have not been to your place in Frederick, how else can they get your chocolates?
So we sell to, Dean and DeLuca and Whole Foods. And then there's also Periwinkle, Kokova, Sugar Cube, a lot of places locally in D.C. But if you go to our website, under the Find Us, it has every place that you can buy it.
Excellent.
And online,
can you order it online?
Mm-hmm. Okay, absolutely.
Great. Thank you so much for coming in today.
When I'm nominated for my Academy Award, will I be able to eat it at the Academy Awards this year?
Hopefully, as you walk down the red carpet.
Right.
I will be there.
You should wear a dress made of chocolate.
That'd be cool.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to wear a Speedo made of chocolate. That'd be
okay.
Awesome.
Or that. Right. There'll only be one red carpet
for
that one.
Give your web address.
That'll give you the award. Zoe'sChocolates.com.
Zoe's Chocolate.
Zoe'sChocolate.com.
www. They're fighting.
Okay, great, guys. Thank you so much. Thanks for coming in.
All right, Chris, step on up to the plate.
I've just had an epiphany.
No.
Well, because I'm a Greek as well, you see. I don't know if you guys know that. You didn't recognize that. Kambitsi. So I'm thinking what these guys should do is because they're looking for something different.
You don't sound
Greek. No. After we're in the alienas, eh?
Right.
I think what is it? I got a good idea is that we should do the Lake Chalice chocolate, more the Lake Chalice Pinot Noir chocolate. So I'll supply you with the juice. You throw that in your chocolate and you got Pinot chocolate.
There you go.
Bingo.
Oh, my God, I love it.
Because actually Pinot Noir goes great with chocolate.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Yeah. And of course, it's always at the end of the night.
He's an entrepreneur. Like look at him.
Oh, yeah. But hey, it's because guarantee you, this is our deal.
No, right.
Ring me for the wine. Okay. Sorry.
Cool.
I digress.
I wanted to. No, you don't digress at all. So listen, we love making that connection on
we
the
do.
Air.
Yeah.
But so, here's the thing. You guys are into some very environmentally PC stuff that involves birds, the Wingspan Trust.
Yeah.
Talk about that a little. Oh,
big time.
Really cool.
Yeah, probably about 23, 24 years ago. I was at a function and there was in Rotorua, actually. And I met a lady there that was breeding native New Zealand falcon and liberating them into the wild. And so it was only a little wee small aviary she had. And Lake Chalice came on board as the wine sponsor. Well, the reason why she spoke to me is because we have this lovely wee falcon on our label. And in New Zealand, we call it the karirea, which is our only native predator in New Zealand, apart from a drunk rugby player on a Friday night. But that's what we won't talk about there. Yeah, so
was in the army with a bunch of Kiwis, so that's not the only predator.
I know, mate. So, that's kind of special. So, we've been involved with Wingspan Birds of Prey Trust, and that's a charitable trust that we are one of the major sponsors for Wingspan. for breeding and liberating native New Zealand falcon into the wild. So it's a pretty good deal. And while I was over here, I did a function for the Raptor Centre in Dayton, Ohio. And we did a fundraiser there for American raptors. And while we were there, we launched a native raptor into the wild while we were there, drinking Lake Chalice and having dinner. So it was a marvelous evening.
You know, when you say raptor, everybody thinks about Jurassic Park.
Yeah, raptor's a bird of prey, so it's a big deal.
Well, let's talk about your Pinot Noir. Tell us a little, you just poured us some. Tell us some about it.
Look, it's Southern Hemisphere Pinot Noir. It's intense. Pinot Noir is not necessarily about big and bold and tannic and lots of alcohol. It's about soft and subtle and velvety and rich and smooth, and it's all about a balance of flavors, and it's about layers of flavors and complexity and well structured wine. Pinot Noir is a difficult grape to grow, and it can be a little wee annoying to process in the winery as well. But it's all about good wine is made in the vineyard. It's not made in the winery. We just assemble it. It's like you guys, you get the good product and you put it together, and that's where it's happened. It's made by Mother Nature.
Well, you know, Nikki has a much better palate than I do. I just know what I like and what I don't like.
Are you supping your white quay white well?
No, but I am. And honestly, I'm not kissing your kiwi here. Every wine you've served has been, I mean, some wines just sort of try and grab you
they're really gentle.
And they grab your taste buds. These are very gentle and delicious. Mm-hmm. I love the sparkling we had. That was great.
The crackling's heavy. Yeah, it's a cracker, isn't it?
Very nice.
I mean, so I always look at Pinot Noir as it's like the consomme of red. And it's not about that. That's people look, oh, yeah, it's pretty light. Well, Pinot Noir, it is a lighter style. But, you know, the skill in making Pinot Noir is having that structure and that richness of flavor that follows through, and you have that consistency. And it's the feminine red.
Well, let's talk about where to find it here in D.C. because
Eric.
I will be looking for it.
Thanks, David. We have great support locally. Bassin's on MacArthur Boulevard has been a great supporter of Chris's wines, like Chalice and some of the other wines from Pacific Prime Wines. Mm-hmm. Schneider's, Cleveland Park, all of the Balducci's. We're getting great support from the restaurant community. Chris and I closed down a couple restaurants earlier this week. Why my voice is a little raspy. Mm-hmm. Pearl Dive, Grape Seed, Founding Farmers all use
his. How about
his
the Old
wines.
Town Market in Kensington, Maryland? No?
Not yet.
A great little wine selection.
Actually, the Old Town Market in Kensington uses Cracklin' Savvy. They have it there.
They have it?
They have a nice selection there. Yeah, yeah. They do.
Grilled Oyster Company, Cheese Tea, Cassatt's, even the Ritz-Carlton on M Street.
That's great.
We're getting great support.
Look at you. Well, Chris, obviously you'll have enough money to fly home.
Well, hopefully. I might get a couple of bucks out of these bottles if I can sell you guys what's left.
Didn't you hear the opening of the show? I'm cheap.
He's very cheap.
I wasn't listening.
Yeah, I know. Just that Pinot, too. Have a crack of that with a bit of carrot cake as well.
I mean, I like it with the chocolate.
I got
it's
this
perfect.
Thing about carrot cake
it's
today.
Good with the chocolate. All right. Well, unfortunately, an hour goes fast, doesn't it?
It does.
We got to wrap up the show. I want to make sure everybody knows that everything you heard about on the show today and a whole lot more you can find on Nikki's website, thelistareyouonit.com, where only about another 40,000 Washingtonians are checking out events and activities in and around D.C. Mm-hmm. Listen to Nikki on WTOP, that's 103.5 FM, every Sunday at 12:40. Did I do that right? Look at me. And on Thursdays, it's sometime. I don't know.
12:10.
Keeps moving around at 12:10.
And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Nikki Nellis. Be one of my more than 20,000-plus followers to see what's going on in and around the D.C. area.
And I want to make sure, again, that you guys know that the show is each week's show and all everything that's archived is available on demand at Realm, RELMnetwork.com. We're also on the Realm Network there, and that's a relatively new thing.
Yes, and I want to give a big shout-out to...
You're like Oprah. You have it, you know...
I'm a media mogul.
Empire.
Okay, so one big shout-out, though. Tuesday night is Chefs for Equality. It's an event that is near and dear to my heart that I'm extremely involved in. There are only a few tickets left. All the chef tables are sold out. 15 mixologists, 60 chefs, the best chefs in the city, actually. Tony Conti is going to be there cooking up at one of the chef tables as well.